Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Pace Labs podcast, the newly rebranded show from the driver's meeting. As you, Stephen, would know, we used to be the driver's meeting. I think I had you on that show, I had you on, I'm already drawing a blank on that. Off the record, yeah, we had
there you. There we go. You had me on something, that's all I know.
But yes, we did. Now we are the Pace Labs podcast. We've our three guests in. You were our third guest. We had the amazing Chase Elliott. We've had Tony Breidinger. And now for our third guest is the wonderful Stephen Malozzi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? I mean, honestly, that's a pretty prestigious list right there.
It's one hell of a list, man. And I'm so honored to have you join it because you have had definitely a wild past, I would say a couple weeks, but really a couple months because of how this, latest, obviously I've, known you for a few years now. I know a lot of your life events that you've had in the racing world and things like that, but a lot more people have gotten to know you these last few weeks as you've kind of been known as now an Outback employee turned Outback race truck driver at Bristol Motor Speedway. So first of all, before we kind of get into the big deets of it, how was that experience? How was racing in the Bristol night race on a Thursday night? And what can you kind of take away from that experience and kind of what that whole week was?
So a few things. One, the crowd at Bristol was crazy compared to the other truck races I've done. There were a lot of people there. And that was pretty sweet. That was really cool. And I feel like we got a good amount of applause for starting last, which was, pretty sweet. But also, like, Bristol, I don't remember the last time I was truly afraid behind the wheel of a race car. And, like, Bristol's actually a scary racetrack. Like, it is on edge. It is go, go, go. And it is constant. I think part of that was because maybe we were kind of slow. That might have played a role in it because there was always people going around us. But at the end of the day, it was a badass experience. Bristol's one of those places you always dream of. It's probably one of the five most prestigious tracks in all of NASCAR. And to get to race there is pretty crazy. You know, now I just basically have to knock off Daytona. Probably Talladega would be a good one to knock off. But racing at Bristol was badass. It was really cool.
Yeah, I think this is real cool for you because I know when you got that first start, when you were telling me a few years ago about how your goal was to just at least run a race,
yeah.
And you got that opportunity finally in Mid-Ohio, with Josh Riom, you were able to run that race. And now kind of this year coming out here, it kind of feels like you're checking off bucket list items. You got to race at Martinsville. You ran the Tricky Triangle over there at Pocono. And now you get to run the Bristol Night Race. And like you said, Daytona, Talladega on the horizon. This is something like a few years ago that you even would have thought was possible.
No. And I know you and I have talked extensively about it. And at this point, talked to a lot of people about it. But at the end of the day, when I retired from kart racing, I thought I was done. Like I didn't ever see a way for me to get back into it. Especially with how expensive racing is. And like, to be frank, COVID kind of saved my racing career. It allowed me to allocate my resources in a way that investing in the stock market made me a good chunk of change. And as a college kid who had a good amount of money from Virginia, got a full ride to Temple, I felt comfortable spending all of that money, knowing I had a backup plan in law school, on racing. And that's kind of what allowed me to do all this late model stuff. And then, obviously through all the networking I've done over the course of my racing career and my working career, I've been able to find sponsors throughout that have supported my stock car NASCAR career. If you had told me 3 years ago, going into the end of the 23 season, I would have not one, not two, not three, not four, but five NASCAR Truck Series starts and full approval to do the whole schedule, I'd say you're lying out of your ass and you're just making that up. So to be here, and not only that, have run pretty well at all the tracks we finished. I mean, we were not that bad at Martinsville. We were definitely not the slowest truck at the track. We were probably faster than five or six on speed, which is great considering it was my second truck start. We finished 24th at Pocono, and we were not that slow. We had a good piece at Gateway, shockingly, and just the battery issue killed us. We finished 22nd at Mid-Ohio, and I think Bristol was our first real disappointing run based on pure speed. I mean, we just did – there's no other way to put it. We did not anything at Bristol. It was really just stay out there and run all the laps and learn. which I felt like was a combo of a lack of experience and you know, I don't feel like the truck was there either for me. And Josh actually apologized to me after the race. It was like, hey, I don't feel, I feel like we let you down. I'm like, buddy, there, Josh has done so much for me in my career. There is nothing he could possibly do to let me down at this point, because the only reason I've ever existed in the realm of NASCAR is because of what Josh Raymond has done for me. But it was really disappointing, because we go through all this PR, we get all this great Outback press, we get, you know, Kenny Wallace and Bob Pockrass is tweeting about it, and Jeff Gluck is tweeting about it, and Clinton Boyer is tweeting about it, and Sports Illustrated writes an article, and Toby Christie writes an article, and it's up and down the internet, Stephen Malazzi, Outback Steakhouse. We kind of shit the bed, and that kind of upsets me, because I feel like that was the race I really wanted to show people we got it.
I mean, I think, you know, getting to run the race and all the PR was amazing. I think it definitely, like you said, it kind of makes up for it, what the race probably was, and kind of speaking how Josh Raymond, you know, all he's done for you and your career, which I think is really cool, kind of the partnership that you guys have built, you know, going back for so long, whether it, you know, was when you were running late models, when you were running now in the truck series, when you guys were at Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, there's so many great stories, you know, but to...
that Chuck E. Cheese trip is integral to my racing career, because that was from Knoxville, and Josh had asked me, because he needed somebody to ride with him, and RBR was a little short staffed at that time too. But he needed somebody to help keep him awake, because our hauler driver had bailed on the event. So it was him and Matt Wolper. And Matt was the employee who in 2020 had a heart attack at Bristol Dirt. That was Matt Wolper. So Matt, Josh and I were all in the hauler, and Josh just needed someone to keep him awake for the night while Matt slept. So I stay up and I am just talking to Josh. We kind of hammer out our life events. And that's kind of when we really bonded and became friends, as opposed to just this kid who had wandered into his shop and kind of just been there. So we end up blowing a tire, and it's Labor Day, Memorial Day. I forget. It's one of those days where it's a holiday on Monday, and I forget what holiday it was, maybe 4th of July, something like that. And we end up getting stuck in some random town, and Josh and I decided to go to Chuck E. Cheese and hang out. And like, it's a bunch of, you know, 8 to 11-year-old kids. And then it's just me and NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series driver at the time, I guess it was Camper World, Josh Raum, hanging out and having a good time. And like, that's that event is like really where we built this foundational relationship that led to our friendship. And it's pretty crazy to think about how Chuck E. Cheese has led to my NASCAR career.
It is. There's so many great stories and so many, you know, things that you can look back on, like, man, like this really kind of kickstarted this or something like
that.
Kind of like, as far as, you know, the Outback deal that you had, you know, it started with a tweet, and I'm sure there were little mini things here and there. Like, I'm sure before that, even you were like, you know, wow, I'm, you know, if Outback could sponsor a car, sponsor my car or truck, you know, this would be so cool. And so it kickstarts with that tweet. All of a sudden down the road, boom, they're the primary sponsor on your truck for the Bristol Night Race. So kind of like, how did that deal, you know, because I'm personally interested, because we've had conversations on my fantasies with companies being on race cars. How does that deal come about, as far as like really making it official, from just a tweet where you're like, you know, hey, this is me, I'm working for Outback, and also having a dream of racing in NASCAR, to boom, you are racing in a NASCAR truck sponsored by Outback, you know, under pretty much for Josh Raum. How did that all come full circle officially?
Yeah. So I've loved, part of the dynamic that people don't talk about enough is how much I have loved Outback Steakhouse my whole life. Like, when my dad and I were growing up in racing, like even when I was like 12, 13, 14 in kart racing, we would find an Outback Steakhouse. And every time after a race weekend end, we get the Outback special, and which is a 6 ounce sirloin. I get a cooked rare, I get a house salad, lettuce, cheese, and croutons, and a load of baked potato, no chives. Every time, every race weekend, my dad would do the same thing. If we went to a store that had a clam chowder, I'd get the clam chowder. And like, for my birthdays. My dad would be like, oh, let's go to some nice restaurant, you know, celebrate your birthday. I'm like, Dad, save the money, baby. I want Outback Steakhouse. That's where we're going. And that's, I loved it. I loved it through and through. You can't beat a blooming onion. And like that foundation right there already leads to a perfect pairing between sponsor driver. I love the company I'm representing thoroughly. I will endorse their product to the end of the earth. That's step one. Then I had been delivering pizzas and I got one too many speeding tickets off the job. Never got one on the job. They were all off the job. I used to do NASCAR driver speeding. It kind of makes sense. And Domino's insurance policy would no longer cover me as a driver. They told me I could stay on working as an insider. I decided that's not something I wanted to do if I was going to work for Domino's. I wanted to be as a delivery driver, which was a great college gig, by the way. Loved that job. But at the end of the day, they're like, yeah, then we're going to need you to quit. I quit. I was never technically fired. Okay. They just told me I couldn't work as a delivery driver anymore and I had to switch positions. So I said, listen, guys, thanks. I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm like, what's the closest job to delivering pizzas I can find? Probably serving. What's my favorite restaurant? Outback Steakhouse. There was an Outback in Charlottesville at the time, or there still is. I was just there 4 days ago for an appearance. I ended up working at Outback, and this was in 2021, I think. So I've been there for at least a couple of years now, almost three, I think. And then I started this sponsored relationship totally separate from that. NASCAR is going on. And I had mentioned to some of my bosses at the time, like, hey, I do this kind of thing that's sort of turning into something with NASCAR. I don't really know. And nobody really said anything until that Martinsville race where, you know, the race ended 1 o'clock in the morning, 12:30. I get back to my apartment at 3:30 and they end up showing up for my 11 a.m. shift the next morning, ready to rock and roll. And it's a double. And I think 4 o'clock rolls around right before dinner. And I'm like, man, like, and actually the specific circumstance was I had a difficult table who was not being very pleasant to me. And I remember putting down their Bloomin' Onion and they complained to me about the quality of the Bloomin' Onion. So we got them new Bloomin' Onion. That's how we roll, you know?
Yep.
And I remember thinking, man, I'm like, these people don't know that I was in a NASCAR race yesterday. And I'm like, here I am, you know, giving people their Bloomin' Onions. And no one has any idea that I was on TV literally not even 24 hours ago. So I go up to this, we had this big board at the Charlottesville location that says some, you know, standard about Outback. And I take a picture of my thumbs up in front of it. And I take a picture of our truck from Martinsville and I post them and I write a beautifully crafted tweet. I don't look at my phone again because we get busy for dinner until I eat dinner myself at around 8 o'clock. I'm like, holy crap, this thing is blowing up. So I sit down and I go find the director of marketing for Outback and I tag her in a tweet at the bottom. And lo and behold, she sees it, sends information down the chain of command to get to me. I send it back up, meet a marketing executive that I've been talking to ever since. Boom, blammo, there we go. That's the story. It spitballed from there, and we ended up settling on the race that we should do is a race that's close somewhat to my home store in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we would like to do an appearance at a store that I've been at before in my life, and we would like to do a race day appearance. So we decided on Bristol, Tennessee, and that's kind of where the story lies. And that's kind of how we ended up with Outback Steakhouse on a race car. Yeah, pretty crazy. Pretty crazy, if I do say so myself. I have a poster that I got to keep from one of the appearances that's like meet our athlete mate. And it's a picture of my face on an Outback truck. I'm like, wow, that's crazy that some people came to Outback Steakhouse to say hello to me. Like, that's pretty nuts. So
I know I was seeing that. I was like, meet Stephen Malau. I was like, man, he's doing meet and greets and everything.
Yeah.
Back, I was like,
we did three of them. And one of the craziest things is that we did a Food City appearance, which if you follow NASCAR, you know who Food City is because they've been sponsoring the Bristol. It's the Food City 500 a lot of times at Bristol. And Food City is based in Bristol. So when they saw we got an Outback deal, I one of my other sponsors, Louvabella Winery, which love to plug all the sponsors who support me, had actually got me in touch with one of their marketing directors because Louvabella has a wine deal with Food City. And they're like, you should do this. They're like, they'll set you up. And I'm like, cool, I can give out Bloomin' Onions. I'm at this Food City giving out Bloomin' Onion cards. And I look down at my phone because I'm getting a call. It's from an Atlanta number that I don't recognize. I decline it. Goes to voicemail. And I get a voicemail. And I don't look at it till after I'm in the appearance. Turns out it is the CEO and president of Outback Steakhouse calling me to wish me good luck. I'm like, holy crap, I just declined the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I'm like, I am going to kick myself if he doesn't answer my next phone call. But he did. He picked up. We talked for like 15 minutes about racing and this and that. And it was unbelievable. I'm like, that is nuts that the CEO president of the company that I love gave me a phone call and said, good luck, man. We appreciate you. Like it's great. And he had told me that he had seen a lot of the press that had gone out and was, you know, like he didn't, you know, he was very proud to be able to do this for one of their employees. And that's the thing with Outback Steakhouse. It is a big family, I feel like. And I've always felt at home. And I can only obviously speak for the working environment for the three stores I've been in, but all three of the stores I've been in have a very positive working environment. All of my bosses have been awesome. They've all been so supportive of this dream. And so far, everybody I've interacted with at the corporate level has been the same way. And that really makes me feel good about the company that I work for and about the fact that I've loved and patronized their company for so many years. And I said this to everyone, like I would keep working and keep eating it out back, even if they didn't sponsor me. So that is what it is. That's how I feel about Outback Steakhouse. I don't even remember what question we were on and how we got this far down the rabbit hole. Sometimes I just start talking and I don't know when to stop. So I'll leave it. You guide the interview, baby. Tell me what's next.
Well, that's how good podcasts work, man. That's what we're all here for.
Right.
Podcasts, and you know, sometimes guests come on, they're like, what format are we running? I'm like, dude, we're just hopping on here. We're just going to have a conversation. You know,
dude, we're just, talk. Yeah.
It's yep. going to turn into something interesting, and that's what the people want, you know? So, yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that is great. And the thing is, like, I think in NASCAR, Outback was one of its staple sponsors. You know, people always knew Kevin Harvick's Outback car and always saw, you know, hey, if he gets a top, I think, what was it, like a top 10, you get a free Bloomin' Onion on Mondays or something like that. Oh, yeah. I was locked in on that deal. I was locked in.
Kevin Harvick, they actually gave me like probably close to 1,000 of these that I have to try and give out to people. Cause obviously I think we had established that the top 10 was off the table. So they gave me a bunch of these to give out. Steven Malazzi branded Bloomin' Onions. And I think I tweeted out yesterday, hey, if anybody wants a hero card, request one and I will send you a free Bloomin' Onion. So we're still working the Outback PR, even after the race, we're going to keep digging on this Outback PR stuff and make sure that they get every damn dime's worth of their sponsorship deal with me. And I hope to bring them back on next year for a race or two. That would be the ideal situation for sure.
That would be awesome. And I know I had that conversation with you, you know, even before this was all announced. I think this was months ago where I was saying, you know, obviously, you know, some people know how I am now, you know, over at Chick-fil-A, working at Chick-fil-A. Yep. That's my second job, just like good old Amir, working at Chick-fil-A. And so, you know, I've been gunning, you know, waiting to pull the trigger because, you know, our operator over at our three stores that I work for, that I manage at, the guy above me, our operator, is a huge NASCAR fan. He's a huge Martin Truex Jr. fan, I should say, but he's a huge NASCAR fan. He's a historian, you know, big Darrell Waltrip historian. He just gave me a whole bunch of stuff. He went to Bristol. He actually was at Bristol, watching the races. And he got like a Kevin Harvick program for me, cause you know, Harvick's like my childhood favorite driver. And he got me some of those from his last year. So, he was there, cheering you on. And so I think I sent him something about your deal, just to kickstart it. And we had talked about it a little bit back in February when I went to Atlanta, the corporate headquarters over there at Chick-fil-A. And I'm like, look, man, like, you know, Chick-fil-A hasn't sponsored a car. They have before, but you know, it was like one time and it's been a while. And I was like, you know, we can get something together, you know, me, you, we partner up, you know, we get with Chick-fil-A corporate, do something in the Florida area. Cause there's a big old Chick-fil-A right outside Daytona International Speedway.
Yep. There's a big old Outback Steakhouse right outside that.
And there is too. And I've been to both of them. And
you man, know what? So, I'm here. February 24.
So I'm saying my big dream is like, you know what? I got the connections in the garage. We can make something happen. We find, you know, get the right corporate people around this, you know, that's where the money is. And we build something and we make it happen. Daytona 24. I don't know what exactly it would be. But I'm trying to gun for that, to have Chick-fil-A either on a race car, part of a team, something like that. I told you my ultimate fantasy is running one race and retiring, getting ARCA approved for the ARCA Daytona race.
That is my dream too. And apparently when you do one race, you can't just give up after one. You have to do five, and then five might turn into 10. And then before you know it, you somehow end up in a full-time ride and you're like, holy crap.
Well, man, if you can find an ARCA or truck ride, we'll figure something out. We could both run in the ARCA race in 2024 and get her done. I mean, it takes two to make a tandem draft. So
the biggest problem with all of it is you have to find money to do the races where there is no advertising value.
Yeah.
And like, and when you're doing your late model events, this is where all of my money went and why I had like, a lot of the times outside of St. Louis, sponsors have covered at least half or more of my expense to race, which, by the way, is much smaller than most expenses to race. Like, you know, there's some people spending 150 grand a race on a truck race. But even so, I've been very fortunate with the sponsors I have networked to cover a lot of my expenses for racing in the truck series. Like I said, outside of St. Louis, where obviously I sold my car and that was the big story. But the problem is not that. The problem is finding money. Because if you dig hard enough, you can have a Spencer Boyd-esque career and really find money to get to the racetrack, run around, ride around, not wreck shit, and make a good living off of just finding that type of financial commitment. The problem comes in when you have to get your licensing. Like, you have to build the experience and the learning on the lower levels, like late models or even ARCA is problematic. Because, you know, even to get to the ARCA race can cost you 20, 25 grand. And it's crazy that it's that kind of money to do these lower level events, because there's not really the sponsorship value. So when you have to get approved, I think I dropped every dime I had, which after COVID, I started with, I think, 15 or 16 before COVID happened. I invested it all, and I ballooned that to almost 100. I blew it all, every cent, just to run late model races at the level that I did. There are late models out there that are tens of thousands of dollars a race to run. If you want to go win the car store or something, it ain't cheap. You know, you're going to spend a crap ton of money to get race-winning equipment. That's why I have so much respect for guys like Landon Huffman. I don't know if you know Landon.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody watching knows Landon. Landon Huffman's one of my favorite people to interact with him in the racing world, because he's a generational racing guy. His dad won a bunch of championships, or won at least a championship at Hickory. He's now doing it too. And Landon works on his own crap. That's his gig, man. Landon just keeps his stuff clean, goes out there. He's smart enough with race cars to work on his own junk. And he's a truly talented guy. And like, other than people who can buy rides, Landon Huffman's the dream. Like, that's the guy who knows what he's doing. That's a guy who I could pull forward racing, knowing that he works his ass off for what he has. And I love the impact he has in the late model community. But the problem is, it's so expensive to have these rides in late models, and there's just no advertising value. It's so difficult to really find money that covers your expense to get race winning equipment. That's the reality of it. So yeah, I'd say your biggest hurdle is probably that, probably getting approved to do ARCA. After that, man, it's you can figure it out. I know you can. I know you've got this networking down. I know you do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can tell that'll be a harder process than a lot would imagine. But that's why I like to ask questions and see. I'm like, okay, what would, that approval process look like? Because I mean, you see, yeah, majority of the approval process for, say, racing one race at ARCA at Daytona, even anyone listening that would be aspiring to do something like you have done and what I'm, just fantasizing in my head. Getting approved for one ARCA race at Daytona, because I think a lot of people were in the impression, I think I was for a little bit, where it was like, okay, it's all you got to do, run the ARCA test at Daytona, run 6 laps and you're good. But I don't think that's all, is it?
So with ARCA, I honestly don't know because I've never done ARCA. I've made it kind of a goal of mine to not to skip ARCA, but to not spend money in ARCA. Especially because of how difficult it is to find those resources. Would I race ARCA now? Yeah. If I could find the money, I would love to get some practice in ARCA. The biggest value in ARCA at this point is the fact that they have extensive practice sessions. And my biggest qualm with NASCAR right now, the Cup Series, fine. There's nobody racing in Cup who needs 50 minutes of practice, I don't think. Although it would be beneficial. I think all the drivers would love to have 50 minutes of practice. But especially in like the Truck Series, why are we doing 15, 20-minute practice sessions? Like, there are people in the Truck Series who need, me included, who need those 50 minutes. Like, that would be awesome to have that level of practice on a racetrack. Because I find myself going into each of these tracks and not figuring out the racetrack until the end of stage two sometimes even later. Bristol, I don't know that I ever figured out. I wish I had 50 minutes of practice. So the value in ARCA is the fact that you get these extended practice sessions where you can really fine-tune your abilities as a race car driver. In terms of what it takes to get approved, I think you have to have some type of resume. I don't think you can just run no late model races or no stock car races and be like, hey, ARCA time, I'm going to run the test. But I don't know what the requirements are for the test. So maybe if you go into the test, you're like, yeah, you can make it look like you
I
really belong.
don't think there are, because like if I remember, there was, I think there's been multiple teams that have done this, but I've seen, like, I think it was the one that I saw like a few years ago, it was like Willie Mullins' team, and they were like, hey, like, we're offering free rides in our car at Daytona, just pay us X amount of money and you can run like 10 laps in the test or something like that by yourself. Like, literally people can just pay and run in that ARCA test. So that's why I'm sitting here thinking, like, literally I think anybody can just hop on in there. And I mean, I know, Charles Kroll, and I could even ask him really what all the deets are, because he'd know. But it's just kind of funny when I saw that, I was like, can you really just, and when we were in Charlotte back last year around May, I there was a sheet and an application sheet outside the ARCA hauler. I took a picture of it. I'll always save it and I'll always remember it, because we love ARCA. We love the ARCA series. We know there's a lot of jokes that can be made about it, but it's all in good fun. We know everybody in the ARCA series is, working their ass off, and we love everybody
Oh, yeah.
in that organization. But it can be the butt of a joke sometimes. And so we roll up to the hauler and there's literally a sheet that just says ARCA driver, like, interest form or application form or something like that. You just fill out your information, send it in. I was like, yo, I was like, I turn around, I look at Artez, who I was with, and I was like, yo, we going ARCA racing, boys? I was like,
Yeah.
all we got to do is just fill this paper out. And so it was, that was funny. But I don't know. I mean, I think, I feel like the truck application, the truck approval process is probably 10 times harder than ARCA, I would assume. For trucks, I would imagine, because there's no like test you can do. It ain't like as convenient as the ARCA test. Like, for trucks, you got to probably have the resume that you had, right?
Yeah, and honestly, even my resume probably wasn't quite what had been expected. My approval was hugely conditional in Mid-Ohio. Like we I the biggest concern I had in the garage after practice was that they were going to pull my approval. But I think NASCAR agreed that it wasn't really our fault that we crashed.
They read that article.
Oh, they saw the Toby Christie article. And obviously, the guys at NASCAR aren't stupid. They know what's going on behind the scenes. Props to them for letting me do that race. And I don't think we were in, I don't think we looked like we really didn't belong. Stage one was rough, but we also had something wrong with the truck at first. And I think people were like, oh, then, well, then you were slow in stage two as well. But in stage two, we also had scuffed tires on, so we were a little slower. But stage three, I mean, up until the very last lap, we were probably in front of five or six trucks in the lead lap. And then we got freaking punted by my teammate, which was really frustrating. But who was 32, 34 laps down, something ridiculous like that. I don't know what the hell he was racing us for. But like, and then you look at it and you're like, okay, 22nd, whoopty freaking do. I was RBR's best finish for the entire second half of the season in my debut race. And I think NASCAR was like, okay, yeah, he didn't have the resume that a lot of these kids who have come up and through the ranks have. Yeah, he's pretty inexperienced, but I think he shows that he can belong on these circuits and then he should be here. Martinsville, I think we did a nice job too, right? Like, didn't cause any problems. We got laps. We were out of the way. We did fine. We were faster than a few trucks who were there. We made a few passes even. Same deal at Gateway, right? Like, we had an issue. We acted correctly during the issue. We pulled right off the racetrack onto an access lane, so we were off the racing line with the battery problem. Went back out 13 laps down, stayed out of the way of the race. And we were, again, faster. I think at one point we could have passed a pack consisting of Timmy Hill and Tony Bryan, right up there with, and Josh Hacker. We were up there with all those guys racing, but what was the point of passing them? You know what I mean? Like, why are we going to 13 laps down? Why are we going to pass anybody? Pocono totally belonged. Nobody questioned it. I mean, we avoided an accident. We beat up five or six trucks on raw speed, had a great day. And then Bristol, I think, was the first time it really looked bad. Like, and we were great. We were back there with Greg Van Alst. Like, him and I were having a hell of a battle for the slowest truck on the racetrack. But, you know, I think it's all part of the learning curve. We are not in A-tier equipment. We are budget racing here. And I think for what it's worth, Greg is a guy who has a lot of racing experience. And I think to compete with him is not a terrible thing. And we still have a lot to learn on the circuit. So the truck series approval process, to answer your question more concisely, is indeed very strict. I've known people who have more experience than me who've been denied. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to the conditional circumstance of what you're trying to do. I think picking Mid-Ohio as our starting race was a large reason for our approval. It's a really difficult track to be in the way at. It's huge. It's 2 point something miles. Like, it's a minute and a half long. It is a big, big racetrack. And I think my road racing background in karts and obviously the experience I have doing that was a big part as well. But at least in terms of ovals, it's a pretty strict approval process. Yeah,
for sure. Definitely. That my next question for you was going to be, you mentioned your glorious battle with Greg Van Alst. I was going to ask, in all of your truck series starts, what has been like, is there a person, a driver that you've had like the best battle with on track or something like that? Or is there anything that you can recall?
My favorite battle is probably Josh Raymond Pocono. I love racing Josh. I think it's very competitive between us. And obviously, anytime Josh is on the track, he's going to be in comparable equipment to me. And with over 100 NASCAR starts, he's a great benchmark. But I had a good battle with I've had a couple good ones with the 04. I had a good one with Mason Massey back at Martinsville. I had a really good one at Pocono with Spencer Boyd. You know, I've had some good ones out there. I've had some fun. Greg Van Alst at Bristol was kind of just sad for me. Him and I were just so far off the pace. I got to imagine he feels the same way. That was a disappointing run. And the man has had a brutal start to his NASCAR career, at least NASCAR National Series career.
Yeah.
He does not deserve that start that he's been getting. He's a hardworking dude. And you know, he's had a difficult year so far outside of winning Daytona. So I hope those guys over at Young's in the 20 truck, you know, give him something to race with, especially this week in Talladega. Obviously, he's shown he could win at a super speedway. So
exactly. Yeah, I feel for him because it sucks. I mean, his year started like on bro was on top of the world. I mean, I watched him win at Daytona. His crew was ecstatic, and he was ecstatic. And now this year, it just it sucks kind of how it spiraled downhill, and how, you know, it's like, you know, in racing, that one thing, you know, can't you know, on track as far as can't, you know, make your entire year. You know, unfortunately, there are definitely still some hardships for him and the team. And then, you know, they kind of, when they got wrecked and they got dumped at Charlotte and ARCA, and then having to miss out on a few of the races and not being able to really run for, you know, as well in points as they would have wanted. It does stink. I mean, at least they do have that, you know, Daytona win to fall back on. I know his starts with Alpha Prime haven't gone as how he wanted. And now Young's Motorsports, they haven't run as well. So it stinks. But yeah, great Greg Vanoss shout out. We all know he's a hard worker and he's a good dude. And hopefully he'll be able to find his footing by the end of the year. And now, yeah, the Truck Series rolls into Talladega. You know, we could talk about the Truck Series a little bit, just so, because you've been running a little bit in that series this year. What are your expectations for Talladega this weekend? How many trucks are crashing? Who do we think's going to win? What are we looking for?
16 trucks crash. I think 13 end up not running at the end. So I think 16 or three or four are really damaged, but keep going. 13 are DNFs. Who do I think wins? I'm going to put Zane. I'm going to say, got to represent the Ford boys. I think Zane wins. Ford's just built different on super speedways, I always feel like, especially Talladega. And I feel like in terms of racing IQ, staying out of trouble, Zane Smith is probably one of the best in the Truck Series, and he's definitely one of the wiser drivers in the Truck Series. Now, who do I think? I don't even know who else I would put to win. I'm gonna go with that. Ben Rhodes is always a threat at these races. He's stolen a couple from a few underdogs at Daytona, we know. The 25 truck won last year, but who the hell knows who's – I don't even know who's in it this race, so.
Yeah, I'm looking at – yeah, we don't even know who's in the 25 this way. I'm looking at the rosters post. It looks like we don't even have a driver for the one Tricon car. Corey Roper's in the show. Corey Roper.
How many trucks are going, do we know?
What's up?
How many trucks are going to Talladega?
I would assume it's going to be over 36, because that looks like you got the 10 truck, Jennifer Jo Cobb's there, the 28, Brian Duzat is racing. So I'm assuming there's going to be DNQs. There's going to be people going home, but we'll just we'll have to find out who those are. But yeah, looking down the list, we don't know who's in the 25 truck.
34 truck is going.
Brett Moffitt running that throwback truck for front row. So there'll be two front row trucks, probably be helping that 38 of Zane Smith. So that's cool. But yeah, man, looking forward to what is going to happen this weekend at Talladega for you. It's been definitely a whirlwind of a year. Really cool to see. And then, so what do you think, you know, looking at next year, 2024, I don't know if your year's over yet or whatsoever behind the wheel. But what are you looking forward to for next year? What do you think your goals are? What are you going to try to accomplish? I know you list off a few tracks for me, you know, Daytona, Talladega, stuff like that. Is there anything else you got in the pocketbook?
Well, that's what I'd like to say. I'll be racing at Talladega. No, I'm kidding.
This weekend in the 25.
I wish. Yeah, right. In the 25. Let me reach out to Rackley right now, see what they got going on. At the end of the day, I think this year's probably over. I got a lot going on with law school and it's just kicking my ass.
Yeah.
Probably next year the goal is to do Daytona or Talladega, yeah, ideally. I would love to keep doing two or three races a season. I think that's a reasonable expectation. And we'll see what we can get out of this Outback deal and see what it'll spiral into. Hopefully a few more partnerships with other companies and hopefully a continued relationship with Outback. We really got to see, man. It's one of those things where the career of a small-time racing driver, you go with the wind.
Exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to what's ever next for you. And if you're in Daytona and Speed Weeks, hopefully I'll be there too. Well, I will be there no matter what. But, you know, we'll see, I guess, what I'm doing. Yep. Yeah, looking forward. I know a lot of people that are watching the show have been glad to hear your story and what's been going on. Anything else you want to add before we wrap it all up?
Yeah, if you want some Bloomin' Onion Outback Steakhouse merch, StephenMalaziGear.com. Check it out. Gotta plug the merch. I got does he have it?
No, me.
Baby, he's got the 22 stacking Denny's merch.
You know it's crazy. You know it's crazy. Yesterday I went thrifting. I went thrifting and I saw these purple pants and I picked them up.
Wow. That is going to be a hell of an outfit.
Yeah, we could get real crazy with the purple going on. But this is the only – I just want you to know, I have a very colorful closet. I'm a man of colors and different wardrobes. This is the only purple shirt that I have. So
I'm not – I think my colors are basically gray, black, and Eagles green, and I don't really own any other colors.
Yeah. And I will tell you another fun fact. I don't even think it was planned, but – I'm 5 months into a pretty solid relationship right now. This is what I wore on my first date.
Wow. Wow. So I'm going to be the officiant at your wedding.
We were talking about it the other day and I didn't even think about it. And she was, when I bought these pants, I was out shopping with her and I was like, oh, this matches the shirt that I wore on my first date on our first date. And I didn't even think about it. It was the Stephen Malazzi, shirt.
Kind of honored. Look at that. So what you're saying is the theme of the story is buy a shirt from StephenMalaziGear.com and you will find true love.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That is,
there we go.
That is the marketing tool I'm putting out here on a podcast full of marketing tips.
That kind of feel. Yeah. Yeah.
From the Outback man himself. So, man, thank you so much for coming on the Pace Labs podcast, being our first official guest on here. It was a great show. Wishing the best of luck for you, for everybody listening. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you all next week.